Spring, summer, winter, fall.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott J. Gow. Public companies also have four seasons. Four times a year, they report their profits. Today, a new season begins, and it could be a winter of discontent or just a free fall. Alcoa is first to report later today. But this morning, Deutsche Bank cut its rating on Alcoa shares from hold to sell. So investors are selling. The Dow is down 55 points in the early going, about 0.5% to 85.43. The NASDAQ is down 12, and the S&P 500 has dropped 8. Losses across the board in Asia today, a fraction in Japan, almost 3% though in Hong Kong. European shares are down just a tad so far. The other big Wall Street story this morning is Citigroup and Morgan Stanley. The word is Citigroup plans to merge its brokerage house, Smith Barney, with Morgan Stanley. An announcement could come as early as today. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson has more on that from New York.
Citigroup has posted $20 billion in losses over the last four quarters, and more losses are likely to be announced next week. Giving up control of a brand like Smith Barney would be a sign of just how badly Citigroup needs cash, says Brad Hintz, an analyst at Sanford Bernstein.
If you're the CEO of the company, you can only sell the things that are saleable if you want to raise capital. Smith Barney is saleable. I'm just not certain whether you can sell portfolios of mortgage assets at this point.
And Hintz says Citi may need to shed more as credit card and loan defaults increase. Citigroup is likely to get a cash payment of $2 or $3 billion for Smith Barney. It's Morgan Stanley that may look like the winner in the end, says Graham Turner of GFC Economics.
There are some parts of the financial system that are going to survive. I think brokerage has got to be one of them because ultimately people will be trading markets.
If the deal goes through as planned, it would leave Morgan Stanley in charge of what would be the world's largest retail brokerage. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
The U.S. government is looking into some shady behavior by European banks. They're accused of moving money from Iran through the U.S. banking system, and that's not allowed. Our European correspondent Stephen Beard joins us to talk about that. First off, Stephen, which banks are we talking about?
According to the Financial Times in London, there are nine European banks that are under investigation by the US authorities. Just last week, we learned that Lloyds, a major British bank, has admitted that it was involved in sanctions violations, and it's agreed to pay $350 million in fines to the US and share all the records of its Iranian transfers.
And what exactly are the banks accused of doing?
Well, the allegation is that these banks may have been transferring Iranian cash through the U.S. banking system, but disguising the origin of these funds by a process known as stripping, a process whereby banks strip out information from wire transfers which indicate the source of the money. Inevitably, these banks have been described here in London as members of the strip club.
And do we have any evidence of a connection between Iran's military ambitions and this money?
There does appear to be some connection. An email has come to light indicating that Iran has been trying to buy large amounts of tungsten, which apparently is used in the manufacture of long-range missiles. And according to the Manhattan District Attorney, one of these emails was for 30,000 metric tons of tungsten. So there's little doubt this tungsten was for missiles.
All right, we'll keep an eye on this story. Stephen Beard in London, thank you.
Okay, Scott.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Monday, January 12th on Marketplace.org. There are some real bragging rights attached to being the first country to meet with the incoming U.S. president. China wants that honor. Canada does. But the winner this year is Mexico. Today in Washington, Obama will meet with Mexican President Felipe Calderon. And of course, economic issues will rule the conversation. Dan Gretsch reports from our America's desk at WLRN.
Mexico's bloody drug war is spilling over the border, but so is the U.S. recession, dragging down Mexico's economy, too. The leaders will also hash out issues like NAFTA, immigration reform, and a billion-dollar package to fight the drug war. Jeffrey David Au is former U.S. ambassador to Mexico.
We have important issues to discuss with Mexico: immigration, trade, environment. They are our closest neighbors, one of our largest trading partners, and they're very sensitive to the kind of relationship that they establish with American presidents.
The two leaders have something in common. They're both launching economic stimulus packages for their respective nations. Just last week, Calderon said he would freeze fuel and electricity prices in an effort to curb inflation, which hit a 7-year high in 2008. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
By some estimates, the world will need to double its food production in the next 4 decades. That idea is pretty appalling to those concerned about the Earth's resources. But a study out today suggests, in the U.S. at least, agriculture isn't too hard on the environment, at least not yet. Ashley Milne-Tite has more on that.
Some unusual bedfellows make up the group behind the study. They include the American Soybean Association, ConAgra Foods, Coca-Cola, and the Nature Conservancy. The group found that producing corn, soy, cotton, and wheat has become more efficient in the last 20 years. Michael Reuter is with the Nature Conservancy.
The upshot here is that we're growing more product in a lot of these areas while relying on less inputs.
Meaning water, energy, and soil. Still, demand for U.S. food products is expected to soar.
The question is, how do we increase productivity in the right places to meet that demand without causing further expansion of agriculture into areas that might be important?
And if that expansion does take place, he says, there's the question of how to minimize the environmental impact. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
This week you're going to hear a lot about cars, specifically electric cars. The Detroit Auto Show is underway, and there's much ado about electric. Already Ford has said it'll have a fully electric car available by 2011. It's supposed to go 100 miles on a single charge. Toyota said it plans to roll out its pure electric car a year later. And GM is planning to offer an upscale model based on the Volt technology. As appealing as electric cars might be, they aren't a no-brainer. A new model is available in India, but despite that country's smog problems, the car isn't selling well. Raymond Thibodeau reports from Bangalore.
Anand Mahesh is a salesman for Riva, the only electric car company in India. What he enjoys most about his job is taking customers out for test drives.
Let's just go ahead and see what it sounds like to start. It's on.
It's on now. Yeah, on the motion.
Okay, so it's very quiet.
Of course.
And so we're going into traffic. Uh-huh. Does the horn work pretty well?
Of course. You want to try?
The car may be tiny, but it's got a big horn. That's an essential asset when driving on India's noisy, crowded streets. Riva's been around for about 8 years, but so far it's only sold about 3,000 electric cars. Not so good in a country of 1 billion people, especially considering that about half of those sales have been in Europe. One of the problems is that because of its range of only 50 miles per charge, the Riva is marketed as an ideal second car in a country where most people still can't afford their first one. But India's growing prosperity and a greater focus on energy independence may change all that. Chetan Maini is Riva's deputy chairman.
People really need some time to understand how new technologies shape up, especially when you're the only player.
The Riva is a little pricier than most other compact cars, but as Mahesh the salesman is quick to point out, an electric car requires less maintenance, mainly because there's no engine. No engine means no exhaust, and that means cleaner air. And that's why some Indian states are offering big tax breaks for electric car buyers, as much as 25% off the sticker price. It's a good start, but it's the tip of the iceberg, says T.S. Panwar. He's an air quality expert for the Energy and Resources Institute in New Delhi.
Yeah, it certainly is a good idea to have subsidy on cleaner vehicles like the electric vehicle. But the government should also look at it in a more holistic manner. First and foremost priority should be to invest in public transportation.
For now, Riva hopes to gain a bigger foothold in the eco-friendly transportation market, but it won't be the only player for long. Tata Motors, India's biggest car maker, plans to launch its electric car this year. In Bangalore, I'm Raymond Thibodeau for Marketplace.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Our friend Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine wants to start the new year with a basic stock market reminder. You still better be thinking long term. All right, Alan, that's one of the cardinal rules. Can you elaborate a little bit?
What I'm saying is that paying serious attention to the daily or hourly fluctuations in the stock market is not going to really do you any good. The stock market is rational in the long term. In the short term, it isn't necessarily rational, especially now.
What do you think is driving the market on a day-to-day basis?
You have mutual funds and hedge funds that need to raise money because investors are taking their money out, and they take whatever they have around that they can sell, and they sell it to get enough money to pay to the investors leaving. And that has nothing to do with the economy. It has nothing to do with interest rates. It's the internal workings of Wall Street. But we impose on this idea that every move in the stock market has a rational cause. You know, a lot of it in the short term is not rational, and we treat it as if it is.
All right, well, let's look a little bit more long term at what has just happened to the stock market. What are you taking from the stock market's behavior of late?
What I'm taking is the markets are very, what they call, gappy. They have a tendency to move up and down a lot. Things are probably revolving around some central statistical point, but I don't know where it is, because if I knew where it was, I could make a fortune when it went below it or above it. But I just don't know. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of people desperate to get cash to get out of problems. And I think that there are a lot of people going into their 401k plans trying to personally stay afloat. Mm. There are a lot of strange dynamics that go on in markets that have nothing to do with economics. And I think there's more of them now than there were, just because there's so much fear and so many very fine long-term investors, many of whom, unfortunately for me, have my money, have had a terrible, terrible, terrible 2008. And, you know, they're trying to figure out what they're doing. And I don't blame them, because I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing.
All right. Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine. Thanks.
You're welcome, Scott.
Share your thoughts with us at our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.